Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, June 29th, 2020. I am joined by Alex Brown, who continues to shelter in place in Cornwall, England. Alex, how are things going?
Very good, thank you, Graham. We actually have a hot, sunny day today, so that's good.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's excellent. Yeah, summer has definitely arrived in Europe, I think across Europe, and even in the States I've seen temperatures climbing, so that time of year, which is good because we can get outside and avoid, you know, kind of confined spaces, which is advisable anyway right now with COVID-19.
Yeah.
So in terms of a quick update, I just wanted to mention that we've had, I guess it's 8 schools now that have announced their essay topics, and we've done Clear Admit essay topic analyses for those. You can read those at clearadmit.com. We put a lot of time into that, so I strongly recommend that people dive in and take a peek. What's great about those ETAs, as we call them internally, is that they pull in little snippets of conversations we've had with admissions directors at the school in question. And, you know, we've been doing this for many years now, and I think we offer good advice. It's not too prescriptive. We don't follow a, you'll notice you'll never find sample essays at clearadmit.com. That's kind of just a philosophical approach that we have, where we're not going to say this is a great essay, because people invariably, whether they intend to or not, are then influenced by seeing a kind of a template. But I think we give really good advice in terms of how to break down these essays and begin the writing process. So check those out. Deadlines are now up as well for a number of schools, and we'll just continue to keep on top of that over on the website. And the other big news, as you probably saw, Alex, we launched the Admissions Director Q&A series for this year. The first school, we just published them as schools get them in, and the first school to get us responses was Siebes over in China. So that one is run, and there's a whole bunch that are coming from all the top schools. So stay tuned there. I wondered, Alex, if you would just say a word or two about what we got up to last week before recording this episode with our Admissions Academy and what's kind of to come in that domain.
Sure. Yeah, no, we had our first Admissions Academy lesson or workshop or whatever you want to, however you want to describe it. Last week, I thought it was very good. It was just basically covering issues related to applying for next season, given the current global pandemic. And, you know, what opportunities or limitations that provides for the MBA candidates. So we had a good audience, I thought, Graham. And yeah, I thought the hours event that probably went on maybe 5 minutes longer was very successful. I don't know. I presume you felt quite good about it.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I feel like, when I was thinking about the fact that we take an hour, we talk about a piece of the admissions process, and we're going to do it 6 times. And I feel like if you are listening to this podcast and want to do something to materially improve your chances of getting into business school, just mark these things down on your calendar and join us for the remaining episodes or classes, because I really think you're going to learn a lot. And we've been working hard on it. So the next one, which will be, in about a week and a day, when, you know, because this podcast comes out on Mondays, right? So it'll be about school selection.
Yeah.
And not just like what schools to apply to, but also like how to maybe time your applications. A lot of people ask us about, oh, do I get them all in round one? Do I spread them out? Like, what's the strategy around, and even the order in which you complete them? So we have a lot to say on this topic. And I know that many of you are like, oh, I already know I'm going to apply to these 3 or 4 schools or whatever it is. But I think you'll learn some interesting things when you listen in to this next class, because we're going to talk about, you know, why, you know, how to structure the right group of schools. And for many people, that means adding a school or even, you know, reducing the count in some ways. So we'll get into it. But I'm looking forward to the next class.
Yeah, no, it's very I think it's a really cool series. And certainly in the first webinar, you know, it made me go back and review our admissions book, Graham.
Yeah.
Which I hadn't looked at, quite frankly, for at least a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was rereading some of the content in there, and I'm like, wow, I can't believe that I'm that smart in terms of when I wrote it.
Right,
I'm like,
right.
What's happened to me over the last few years? I seem to have lost the plot a little bit. But I mean, joking aside, I think there's such a lot of good material in that admissions book.
Well, the part, the part that you read was probably the stuff that I contributed. That'd be my guess. If you thought it was really brilliant.
No, for sure. But I mean, you know, we use this idea of candidates building up a personal inventory before they set work in the different applications and the essays and stuff. And I just think that's such good advice. So folks, what I would say is the admissions book is actually freely available if you're registered on the site. Might be a little hard to find it, but basically if you go to the shop, you'll figure it out. But I would encourage anyone applying to a top business school to thumb through that book. It's a PDF, and it'll only take you a couple of hours to read it.
Yeah, and I will say, I know, Alex, you're saying nice things about the book and you're the author, but I will say, I mean, there are a lot of really supportive quotes and comments from people who know this stuff, admissions officers, people over at GMAC who've said this is a great book. So people should read it. It doesn't take long. The other thing I wanted to mention about the Admissions Academy that's kind of fun is we created a private Facebook group. So if you sign up for the Admissions Academy and join us for the coming lessons, you can join the Facebook group and actually get to know some of the people that are applying this year. And I think it's going to be fun, and we'll see how that group evolves over the summer. So last thing I wanted to mention, I think I say this every week, but would love to see some more reviews and ratings of the podcast. It's sort of the fuel that keeps us going. So if you are listening and you've never rated or reviewed this podcast, just do it, please. It'll really help us and help other people to discover what we're doing. Without further ado, Alex, you picked out three ApplyWire entries I saw this week. And I think the reason is that we've started to see the calendar shift into full-on next admission season. I know that there are candidates still waiting on these late rounds and the crazy kind of COVID rounds, as we call them. But there are also more and more people at QueerAdmit.com who are thinking about applying this coming season. So you've picked out three of those that we're going to speak to. So should we kind of move on here and get going with our wiretaps?
Sounds good.
All right, so this is Wiretaps candidate number one. This person's looking at eight schools, which include Berkeley, Columbia, Tuck, Michigan, MIT, Kellogg, Chicago Booth, and Wharton. They want to start in the fall of 2021. Prior to business school, they've been working as an engineer in the kind of autonomous and electric vehicle space. And post-MBA, they'd love to get into consulting or tech and maybe even, stick in that kind of auto or aerospace domain. I believe that's kind of in the long term, or maybe that's the focus for the consulting work. And they're interested in maybe going to BCG, McKinsey, but they also mentioned some of the auto companies, Nissan, Tesla, and they even include Uber because of the autonomous stuff. GMAT score, 770. The GPA is a 6.08, which is this person's an Indian male engineer, and so they went to undergraduate in India where the scale is really out of 10, so 6.08. And just in case some of our listeners are saying, 6 out of 10, that doesn't sound great. The truth is, for most of the really high quality candidates out there, it's rare to see somebody, too far north of 7. So this isn't a catastrophe or anything. 5 years of work experience, currently located in Detroit, Michigan. And the other tidbit that I wanted to share is that they're 30 years old, so a bit on the older side. They also indicate they're really passionate about racing, like motorcycles and cars. And then this was the curveball for me. They are or were a professional violinist, and they went to Trinity College in London to learn Western classical music. So it's an interesting profile. What is your take on this person? Because on the one hand, I could see you, there are a couple of ways I could see you going with this. So what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, you've got an older Indian male in the tech sort of technology space or whatever, seemingly from a sort of overrepresented group and being a little bit older. This is going to be very, very challenging, I think. On the other hand, the interest in sort of autonomous cars, that kind of stuff's very interesting, I think. Autonomous and electric vehicles, which I guess are related but slightly separate. The 770 GMAT's like a wowzer score. Certainly for me, it's like, wow, can't believe, that's a ridiculously high score. But frankly, this whole violin stuff, well, the car racetrack stuff's interesting for sure. But then you could say, well, you know, it's somewhat related to their goals. They're certainly passionate about the auto industry from a couple of different vantage points, which is great, right? But this violin stuff really threw me a loop, because it just, you know, everything you read about this guy does not scream violin interest, classical okay, music yeah. interest and right. stuff. I think that is super, super cool. And, you know, depending on the essays and how you approach the application, I would probably try to figure out how to start an essay talking about the, you know, the passion for classical music and what learning the violin and playing the violin at a professional level has taught this individual mm-hmm. and helped shape who they are in whatever form it has shaped who they are, other than it purely being an interest. Mm-hmm. Because to me, that's their ace in the hole, Graham. 770 is an ace in the hole, for sure.
Yeah.
But this violin stuff is yeah, I think that's super interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's a sort of bit of a Renaissance man, you know, almost. And I would say, when I looked at this, I actually, for fun, I made a list of like pros and cons. You know, so for me, the pros were this, yeah, wild card interest in music and skill in that domain, because it, you know, sometimes schools are worried about, oh, engineers or accountants, like they're kind of good with numbers, not with people, and you know, there's no kind of art side to this person. It's all quant.
But Graham, music's one thing. I think violin is not, I'm not saying it's an obscure musical instrument,
no.
but to me, it's not rock and roll and guitar and drums,
right?
And stuff. This is a different level.
Yeah, So it's interesting. So I think, you know, the music was a positive. The solid work experience doing kind of consulting and it sounds like they actually work with automotive companies, and you know that's why they're in Detroit. And you know, I like the auto sector, you know, niche. Like it's a specific sector. And as you said, the GMAT score is another, you know, pro. On the con side, though, I'm like, wow, 30, kind of a little bit older, Indian engineer, kind of overrepresented. They did not go to a prestigious school for undergrad. And their GPA, as I said, it's okay, but it's not great. I mean, I would have loved to see a 7 instead of a 6 as the first digit in that GPA. And, you know, they also went to grad school in the U.S. state school, and they had a 3.23, granted, in a quantitatively rigorous, again, engineering degree. But so I'm not seeing like great marks. Now, hopefully the GMAT counters this stuff a bit. But yeah, the other thing I was wondering is like, why do they want to be a consultant as opposed to just jumping into kind of a management type track role in the auto or autonomous vehicle sector? So, I mean, part of me feels like they might separate themselves out from the pack a bit more if they weren't targeting BCG and McKinsey, but it were instead looking at like, you know, Uber, Tesla, Nissan, or, you know, whatever automotive companies that might be doing some cool projects in this domain, just because, you know, the consulting track is so common. And I just was a little worried. I mean, that, you know, everyone, I mean, it's just common in any group, but obviously in the kind of Indian engineer group, it's pretty common, right? So that was another piece. But I don't know if you have any thoughts about that. Like if you think it's fine for them to say they want to do consulting and then maybe move into auto.
Yeah. I mean, I understand the desire for consulting first, because obviously from a hardcore engineer's sort of point of view, it's another opportunity for them to get wider business experience,
right,
prior to sort of really focusing, going deep dive into one of these autonomous type opportunities. It looks like they want to take advantage, obviously, of their sort of engineering side, looking at AI, artificial intelligence and all that kind of stuff. So I understand it. And as long as when they express it, they express it with the sheer determination that it's a stint that enables them to further pursue this sort of goal for autonomous vehicles and electric vehicles or whatever. That is. I could buy that. I just think, you know, that they need to be in the first round. They don't want to be applying later in the cycle when, you know, a lot of folks with their demographic have already been admitted.
Right.
So they've got to get the ducks in a row, apply early. Again, this violin stuff, the way, how they can work that into their narrative without being overbearing with it, but trying to be reflective with it. So it helps us understand how that truly shapes them and impacts them, rather than it just be, well, I do this something different that makes me well-rounded. Well, that's very good. But what does that well-roundedness do in terms of how's it shaped you as an individual and developed your characteristics and traits and so on and so forth? That would be interesting to know. How do you get into being a professional violin player or whatever when it looks like, you know, you shouldn't be anywhere near a violin, right? So it's very interesting. Yeah.
So I think enough said on this one, but I did want to ask this person a favor if they happen to be tuning in. I would love for, if they do go on to make autonomous vehicles or electric vehicles, for them to make one with a stick shift and a clutch. That's my only request, because that doesn't seem to exist yet. But we shall see.
How are you going to make an autonomous vehicle with a stick shift? Who's shifting the gears?
Well, I'm saying, like, you know, the ability to actually drive it if you want. And I know with the electric cars, like, there's no stick, and I like driving sticks. So I think I'm just too old at this point. So all right, so let's move on, and we're going to talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this person's looking at 6 schools to start in the fall of 2021. Their targets are Cornell, Emory, Georgetown, Indiana, Notre Dame, and Vanderbilt. And this is a really interesting candidate. They are kind of non-traditional. So they have been working as a public high school strength and conditioning director and a health and personal fitness finance teacher, also doing some financial corporate training. They would love to get into consulting. They're thinking about Accenture or Deloitte post-MBA. GMAT score 680, GPA 3.72, 5 years of work experience. And this person is also located in Michigan. So that's 2 in a row from Michigan today. And they would like to end up either Midwest, East Coast, or Southeast. And they, in the notes, they kind of elaborate. They indicated that they're a white male, first-generation American, and the first-generation kind of college grad. As I said, 680 on the GMAT. They'll have 5 years at matriculation in terms of work experience, and they'll be 28. They've had a lot of extracurricular activities, both related to the church and even, you know, it sounds like they've done some stuff with real estate. I think, you know, obviously they mentioned that they did a master's in education, so they have another degree with a 4.0 GPA, and they're wondering if they should do some extra coursework to kind of get ready for business school. And then you had some back and forth with them too, because this is a kind of not a conventional candidate. And so, yeah, what's your take on this one?
Yeah, this is your sort of typical non-traditional candidate, if you can say typical and non-traditional in the same, sentence or whatever. But yeah, non-traditional candidate. And also a first-generation college grad. So that combination of the two, I think, is quite interesting, right?
Sure.
Because, again, ADCOM admire first-generation folks going to college because clearly they're doing something that they don't necessarily have the mentors or whatever pushing them in that direction. Maybe they decided to do that and so forth. So that's quite good. And the non-traditional aspect, as long as, and we had a conversation about this prior to coming on air, unlike our first candidate who needs to look at their profile and figure out really how to stand out, and we think the violin, being a professional violin player, is one of the keys to that, this candidate needs to figure out how they can fit in and show that they belong in business school and will thrive in business school. And that's the case for any sort of non-traditional candidate. We like non-traditional candidates in the classroom. They have different perspectives and life experiences, but it doesn't work if they don't truly fit into to the program and assimilate with their classmates and so on and so forth. So that would be the challenge here to some degree. It looks like they have a decent overall GPA. It seems it's a bit fuzzy to me. If you include in transfer credits and so on and so forth, it doesn't look quite as good. And maybe the undergrad experience wasn't as rigorous as some of the undergrad experiences at top business schools. But nevertheless, very interesting candidate. The GMAT is average at best, especially again if you're applying to the top tier school. 680 is a good GMAT overall, but when you're really targeting the very best, it's going to be below average for the admissions for those schools. They're looking at doing MBA math and or HBS core. Well, not and or, but or HBS core. Maybe you could, Graham, give your thoughts on whether one is more favourable than the other. I mean, to be honest, I don't really have a point of view on that. But yeah, overall, they've got to figure out how they can fit in. And their goal, I think, is quite interesting. You know, they talk about they want to get into consulting. Then they initially said they want to become a partner and stay in a consulting firm for the rest of their lives. And I'm like, quite frankly, I don't think that works. Because, quite frankly, not many people survive that rigorous environment and thrive and become partners and stay in consulting firms. And if you're coming from a non-traditional background, you're probably going to have additional challenges to set yourself up to do that. I would probably look at the other, and I would probably look at the other direction that they're considering, and that's essentially running a school district. And clearly, management skills and what you're going to learn in a top MBA program are going to be very useful for running a school district. I think school districts are going to be very different in the future in terms of how schools are run. I mean, we're going through COVID-19, lots of homeschooling and that. So how are we going to be using all this technology in the future in terms of education at that level is going to be very interesting. So yeah. I can imagine there's really interesting opportunities in that domain that this person might be very well positioned to go down that path. And the AdCom might be like, wow, this actually makes a lot of sense. Let's root for this guy.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I think I like this candidate. I think, you know, the bootstrap, you know, first generation college, all that stuff works really well. And they have a non-traditional role right now. I too agree that their career plan and goals will be so much more palatable if they're somehow related to this experience they've had in education. Like you're saying. So I would absolutely root for like, hey, I'm going to go do consulting, learn kind of best practices in the for-profit world and maybe even the nonprofit world. And then I want to get back into working in a school system and maybe leading a district or whatever. Like, I think that would be really interesting and unique. And so I like that. The other thing I just want to comment on is the GMAT score. So 680, as you said, respectable score. If you look at the percentiles, because they gave us the breakdown, they're at the 57th percentile on math. Believe it or not, it's not that hard to get down to 57 because there's such a, the curve is just really out of whack on the GMAT for math. So
yeah.
It's not a horrible score. 85th percentile verbal, that's perfectly acceptable and solid. I think, you know, when it comes to the GMAT, you know, you look at their GPA, their grad school GPA, and then the list of schools they're applying to, and you say, oh, okay, well, you know, there's some schools on this list for whom a 680 is going to be right around average or, you know, maybe just a hair below or something. But then there are other schools on the list where it's going to be well below the average. So I think some of that will come out, you know, like, so when they go to apply, you know, a school like Cornell is going to have a higher average GMAT score than, say, Notre Dame, right? So that's just something they're going to have to keep in mind. But I like this candidate. I think they have an interesting profile. And I think as long as they, as you say, can do the hard work of showing they can fit in and that they're ready for business school, they should be in good shape. I would say MBA math versus HBX core, it doesn't really matter. My suspicion is that one might be cheaper than the other. And so if they're worried about costs, I mean, MBA math has been around forever. Schools know it. They respect it. Obviously, they also respect HBX core, which is a newer, you know, player in the space over the last handful of years, but clearly respected too. It just might be more money. So I think if the, you know, whatever one works for their schedule, I would say the schools aren't going to play favorites on that. It's just mostly about getting ready for business school.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number three. So this candidate's looking at six schools, which includes Columbia, Harvard, MIT, NYU, Wharton, and Yale. It's kind of a Northeast Corridor focus. They want to start school in 2021. They've been working as a data scientist at Booz Allen Hamilton in their pre-MBA career. And post-MBA, they would love to get into investment banking, and they're looking at all the usual suspects: Bank of America, Barclays, Citibank, Goldman, Credit Suisse, JP Morgan. They're all here on their list. GMAT score is 730, GPA 3.3, and they've been working for 3 years. They're currently in DC, would love to get to New York after business school. And they indicated that they actually do some stuff outside of the workplace. Like, they've been very actively involved, like both as an undergrad, but even, you know, in their kind of work life, they're continuing to do extracurriculars. I mean, they do some pro bono consulting. They're treasurer of their school's alumni club. They're a member of a literacy nonprofit. So plenty going on there. And they mentioned, the last thing they mentioned is that they are planning on retaking the GMAT over the next couple of weeks in hopes of getting kind of 740, 750, somewhere in that ballpark. So what do you make of this candidate? I mean, it's on some levels, it's sort of a plain vanilla kind of candidacy when with a list of very, you know, very good target schools, all that. But what do you make of this candidate? Any insights you can offer?
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting. Again, I think we talked about this before, this idea that they want to retake the GMAT because they don't think the GMAT's quite reflective of their very best score. And what they'll ultimately end up doing is, if they do retake the GMAT and are successful, they're going to bump up their score maybe 10, maybe 20 points. So there's always debate on whether that's really a worthwhile endeavour, especially since they've got a 730 on the GMAT, Graham, which is at average or above average for every school on the planet. I mean, it is debatable. Some will argue, well, if you have a 750, it's better than a 730, so it makes you a better candidate. And the counter argument is, well, the effort and energy it took to get that 750 could have been applied elsewhere in your applications or whatever it might be, right? So there's a balance there. There's always a cost to retaking these tests in terms of sinking time. But yeah, I mean, the person, I don't know their gender, I don't think, data scientist at Booz Allen Hamilton. Now they want to get into investment banking. So obviously, that, you know, from an analytical standpoint, they're probably well equipped to make that transition, I would think. So that should be very, very good. I suggested that they look at Cornell and Booth. They just seemed obvious schools to add to their list of target schools. And I like the fact that the person is active outside of work. So if they can really show impact at work, Graham, there are basically two principles that we look at for any candidate. Do you show impact at work? Do you show impact outside of work? And, you know, if they can knock both of those, you know, answer both of those questions with positive experiences that illustrate that, then yeah, I think this is potentially a very interesting candidate.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I like the background. I mean, obviously, it's not a, you know, the admissions committee is going to know Booz Allen. The work they're doing sounds interesting, and you know, should play well. They'll clearly be viewed as analytical and having those quantitative chops. So the idea of moving into banking, you know, should seem fairly feasible. Mm. The thing that struck me with this candidate is, you know, obviously the GMAT, you know, do they retake it or not? I mean, if they're really confident they can boost, then I guess it doesn't hurt. The thing I always worry about is, what if they just have a train wreck of a score and get like a 690 or something? Then they send in the score reports, and I'm almost certain that, you know, a lot of the schools in the app will ask you how many times you've taken the test, and they ask for multiple scores, or they'll see it when they get the reporting from GMAC. So I don't want to make this person panic, but I mean, I would only retake it if you're really confident you're going to boost that score. And then the other thing I wanted to mention is just that, you know, I feel like I want to understand this desire to get into banking. I think, you know, data science is a really hot field, and I recognize they're probably doing, you know, more analyst level stuff. And so they want to move up, and maybe banking is the way that they're thinking of doing something different, and a path to a more responsibility, greater salary. But I want to better understand, like, is there anything related to the work they're doing today as a data scientist that they think they'll be able to carry forward into their role as an investment banker? That would be interesting to tie in and hear about. As to the school selection, I agree with you. Like Cornell's a nice choice for banking in New York. I'm assuming that they didn't put Booth, despite Booth's strengths in finance. I assume that they didn't put them on there because of the fact that they want to be there. They seem very focused on the Northeast Corridor with all these school choices. So I'm guessing.
Yeah, I'm guessing
that's what it is. But again, I like this candidate. I just and it sounds like they have plenty of extracurriculars. So I just want to see them. I guess the thing that I used to work with someone in admissions at Wharton who I won't say her name, but there's someone that we both worked with who used to talk about like if a candidate has like spark or sparkle, in their application. Is there something that like jumps out at you, like first generation college kid who is working as in a non-traditional role in the public education system, or the Indian engineer who's also a professional violinist, right? I'm trying to find that angle here, and I'm not yet seeing it, but in fairness, this person didn't give us a ton of information. And so I suspect that there are some things in here in terms of the work they're doing with their undergrad and the pro bono consulting. Like there may be some things that emerge that help them to stand out.
Yeah.
But yeah, overall solid candidacy, and the schools on the list look very reasonable to me, and they'll look even better if they do boost that score. But again, seems like it's a plausible storyline, and based on what we have here, I think they have a good chance.
Very good, Graham.
So that brings us to the conclusion of our three candidates for this week's wiretaps. We'll be back in 1 week's time and with another batch of candidates. I'm hoping that we get some more decision wire entries as schools really finalize things and the classes start to really solidify. But we shall see. I mean, I always like to see those undecided decision wire folks with all the options, and we get to sift through. But obviously, it's fun to look at these new, the newbies that are coming through who are thinking about business school now. And so we'll profile probably a bunch of both next week. We will see what comes in on the wires.
Yeah.
But Alex, thanks as always for doing this, and we'll see you in a week's time.
Very good. Thanks, Graham, and stay safe, everybody.